the list of items that are likely to spark major fights, or at least some distraction, once Congress comes back, is growing. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell promises no more government shutdowns. Democrats, including Senator Harry Reid and the President of the United States, Barack Obama, calling for budget negotiations to start last month. Roll call reports, though, that Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid says no debates, no discussions have started yet. Tom Shoups, editor-in-chief at Government Executive Magazine, and writing about the no-shutdown promise. And I will remark as well that I suggested several months back that the time was ripe for Republicans to start these deals. I'm shocked, I tell you, Tom, but they didn't pay attention to me. And so we find ourselves sitting here in the middle of August with Senator McConnell forced to say there'll be no shutdown in order to try to calm people down before they start to freak out again. What, first of all, does this make any sense to you? And second of all, do you believe it when Senator McConnell says that?
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I understand what he's saying and why he feels the need to say it, because I think he's very convinced, and rightly so, that the previous times there have been government shutdowns, these have had a very bad effect on Republicans. They tend to get blamed for it, and he doesn't want to see that happen again, so I understand it. At the same time, he's making a promise that he doesn't really have full control over whether he can keep, not even in the Senate, which he can't fully control, and certainly not in the House. So he's a little bit out on a limb here in terms of making this promise that there's not going to be a shutdown, because there are a whole lot of ways where that scenario could unfold, and it won't be easy to prevent it from happening.
The turmoil that we've seen in the House with Congressman Mark Meadows, a former guest on this program, deciding to drop a bomb on the House of Representatives leadership right before they left for the fall summer recess, to vacate the speaker's chair. I don't imagine that helped much as far as trying to keep everybody together and keep everybody focused on the idea of getting budget bills done when they come back in a couple of weeks, Tom.
Yeah, there seem to be distractions all over the place and a lack of unity even among Republicans. And the level of inaction on spending bills is pretty concerning. I mean, the House has passed a number of these bills, but they're non-starters with the White House, and the Senate has done nothing on spending bills. So it's not a situation where you can look at it and think, yeah, they'll be able to get these bills passed through and do negotiations and have any sort of regular appropriations. So, I mean, in the best case scenario, I think we have to be looking at some long-term continuing resolution, or maybe, if they get really lucky, some sort of omnibus spending measure. And I'm sure the Democrats would be fine with that and are happy to negotiate, but it doesn't look like they've got anybody who's willing to negotiate with them.
The spending mechanisms I find fascinating, too. We saw a report yesterday that the chief of staff of the Army Reserve is all of a sudden, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, that might characterize his words unfairly, but this report pops up now that he has testified that he's willing to go along with the idea of funding his branch partially through the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget. General Milley, who is taking over today as General Odierno steps down, retires as Chief of Staff of the Army, has said he's also open to that idea. That's contrary to what the White House has suggested, and yet two very prominent military leaders saying, in essence, whatever it takes to get us the money that we need. So there's potential for these distractions to keep popping up from all sides of this conversation, not just from one particular political party or one chamber of Congress.
That's right. And it's pretty clear at this point that there is sort of, that the military has sort of has signaled in a bunch of different ways that they'd be okay with using the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget to flesh out their funding, which, as you point out, that's not what the White House has said they want to do. But it's probably an indication that the White House would, as part of a broader package, maybe accept something like that. But the real sticking point is they don't want sequestration on the civilian side of government either. And that's something that's just a huge gap between Democrats and Republicans. And it's hard to see how anyone's going to be able to build a bridge across that at this point.
Tom Shoups, editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine, and we have a link to his piece on Senator McConnell's comments at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Now, I tease you, and you tease me back, to be fair, about how geeky we are about the topics that we cover. But this one's a good one. You wrote a column about your summer book reading of the new Harper Lee book, the Go Set a Watchman book, and you managed to connect it to people's sentiments about government. So I say kudos to you for that. A job well done. What'd you discover in that book?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it's literally I'm on the beach reading it and somehow managing to connect it to the current debate over the size and role of government. It
doesn't surprise me one bit.
Level. But what was striking about the book, which focuses heavily on the debate over sort of the beginning of the civil rights movement, was there's a character in the book, who the uncle of the main character, Jean Louise, who's known as Scout in the first book, To Kill a Mockingbird. Her uncle makes a case against the growth of big government, which is virtually unchanged from the debate you hear today. You know, when he says, I'm afraid this country will someday become so monstrous that the smallest person living in it will be trampled underfoot and it wouldn't be worth living in. It's the same kind of thing you could imagine Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz saying at the Republican debate last week. So it was just striking to me how little the terms of that debate have changed over time and how much there's a group of people who always think that the horrifying effects of big government are right around the corner and the next thing is going to be the thing that just tears the country down.
Was that book any good?
I thought it was good. I'm not a literary critic, so maybe I'm easily impressed.
No, I don't think that matters. I think if you read it and you enjoyed it, that's good enough for me.
And I did.
My colleague Nicola Grisco and I talked about this this afternoon, and I think the chances of me actually reading that book are, well, is there a number smaller than zero? Because
it's not a difficult book to read.
Well,
I'll say that. If you're
well, that
for
helps
an
me.
Easy read. You know,
that helps me. All right. What can we take away from the discussion about the size and scope of government and apply to what we talked about at the beginning of our conversation about the sentiment of people in Congress to the shutdown? Because one of the distractions that we've heard about in the last couple of weeks was Planned Parenthood. And well, if we're going to pay for that, then if it takes not paying for anything to stop paying for that, then we should do that. I don't know what the logic of that is, but it is what it is, and that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, I think what it says in one way is that the room for compromise on these issues has rapidly diminished, if not disappeared. And Planned Parenthood is a good example. I mean, anti-abortion groups are out there right now, even as we speak, sending people in droves to town meetings that lawmakers are having to raise this issue of defunding Planned Parenthood. They're very serious about it. And I think there's a case to be made that we reached a compromise solution on Planned Parenthood. That is, it gets some funding, but not funding to perform abortions. That's not good enough for a certain group of people who, and if they're willing to go to the mat for it, as people have been at previous times in the past on various issues, we could see a shutdown over that issue if they're that serious.
Well, the ultimate test will be if there are 218 members of the House of Representatives who are willing to go to the mat for it. And I think for the sake of federal employees, I'm not sure I can identify them.
Yeah, and this is the thing I keep going back to is the shutdown tactic, as near as I can tell, has an unblemished record of failure. So I don't know why people keep bringing it up as a possibility or raising it as a potential tactic, because independent of whether you think a fight is worthwhile, this particular tactic never seems to work.
Well, what your column with the remarks of Senator McConnell reinforced for me, though, was that this time around, what I see is as potentially different is the people who are speaking about the possibility of a shutdown and saying, yeah, there's going to be one, are the people that at least I perceive as not having much leverage this time around, and that's Democrats in the Senate and Democrats in the House. In 2013, we heard about, yay, shutdown, and there's going to be one unless somebody does something, was pretty much coming from Republicans in the House of Representatives who were excited about the prospect because they thought it was going to work for them, and they saw how that stinker worked out.
Yeah. There are people on the other side, though, who are saying actively, in the same way that they said defund Obamacare or shut it down, are now saying defund Planned Parenthood or shut it down. And if their voices get louder and continue to be heard, that's going to change the dynamic.